Emerson Show at 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Are you making Scotty move your car?
I have to.
Fantastic.
Scotty just wanted an excuse for a smoke break.
Oh, I have no problem with that. I'm just making sure. Making sure he understands his place. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Just a skosh, we'll go to the Ministry of Truth for the AM 970 New News Hour. Later on, Steve Katzenbaum, James Rube, top five. Tom Likas at 3, Donna Mike at 7. I've got a special surprise to give Tim Riley here in just a moment. Speaking of that Donna Mike promo, we were just playing that Donna Mike promo where they were talking about Saturday morning cartoons. This is a question that can probably be answered by nobody in this room because, A, I can't really picture Tim watching cartoons for some reason, although I'm sure he probably did. I can picture Tim watching Beanie and Cecil, but that was probably before your time. I don't know why. I don't know why I can picture that, because that would make you like 80. time for Beanie. I don't know why I can picture you doing that. And I know that this is before Sarah's time. But there used to be this thing that they would play on, I believe it was either ABC or CBS Saturday mornings. First of all, let me just say that the emergence of all cartoon networks, and I don't mean the cartoon network, but I mean networks that have lots and lots of cartoons, the emergence of networks that are targeted specifically at children, i.e. Nickelodeon or, what is another, Boomerang or whatever, there's that Boomerang channel that's all just cartoon crap for kids. Anyway, as a result, the thing that has gone away, and it's probably for the better, this is probably a better time to be a kid than when I grew up, is you don't have those 9-hour blocks of cartoons on Saturday morning anymore the way you used to. I think I may be the last generation that had that, where from about 6 a.m. until about 10:30 a.m. every Saturday morning, it was just an endless cavalcade of banging the history of everything. You get that, you get yourself a stack of waffles, by God, you're set, and you were happy to be alive. It was the greatest thing. And it sort of lost its specialness. I remember being around 12, 13, right on the cusp, where you start to feel like you're a little too old to be watching cartoons. You come back to it later when you're an adult because you realize they're funny. But you start to fade away from that. But I remember just as I was just in the final stages of my cartoon-watching youth, that they started getting rid of the big Saturday morning cartoon marathon. And I remember being kind of depressed by that fact. But during the Looney Tunes marathons that they would have on Saturday mornings on, I believe, CBS, there was this little interstitial that they would play, not unlike the Schoolhouse Rock segments, which, of course, have been covered ad infinitum in various, pop culture pundits and so forth. But there was this thing that they would play between the cartoons, and it was this Time for Timer segment. And Timer was this guy who looked like, he looked like a huge lumpy baseball or like a big sort of knobbly egg with legs and hands and like a hat and I believe an umbrella. And he would dance around inside the sounds. I'd sound like I'm high. I realize now as I'm telling this, I just sound intoxicated. I sound like I'm in the last throes of a mescaline trip. He would dance around inside your refrigerator while holding a hat and a cane, singing to you about hankering for a hunk of cheese. And he would talk to you about the benefits of nutrition. And he would sing these catchy little ditties, these little songs, about how even if you were running late and you didn't think there was time for healthy breakfast, there was, in fact, a time for a healthy breakfast, and you were always able to find something to eat. And it was clearly aimed at a generation of latchkey kids. Maybe Mom and Dad weren't always around to make sure that you were putting something nutritious into your body. My whole question is not, do you remember Time for Timer? My question is, what the hell was that guy? And I know this veers dangerously close to like a Stand By Me, what the hell is Goofy kind of conversation. But really, honestly, truly, that Time for, was his name Timer? Was that the name of the segment? Was that the name of him, the creature? And what was he? I mean, he didn't, I don't believe he himself was an item of food. I wish Fatboy was here. He'd be able to answer this for me. I don't believe he himself was any kind of edible food product. He was just this weird, round, lumpy, cauliflower-looking thing that had an umbrella and a hat and would then sing to you. And the more I think about it, the weirder it gets, because I can't come up with any plausible explanation as to what kind of creature he was and why he was always just hanging out inside your freezer. The whole thing is just mystifying. Freezer?
I barely knew her.
All right, I'm going to do this one story, and then we'll go to Tim Riley. I've decided later on I'm going to read these.
By the way, that thing spreads like a tick. I cannot stop saying that now.
Barely knew her.
And then I'll laugh whenever anyone says anything that ends with ER.
I had a Seamus happen to me last night when Laura was talking to me, and she's like, yeah, so-and-so, blah, 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 diagnosed with cancer. And I had to fight back the cancer. I barely knew her. I didn't say it. I fought it back, though. I fought it down valiantly. No, it infests you. It's there forever. You'll never stop saying that. Later on, we will read these two terrible stories, and we'll have you determine which is the worst. As the year goes on, we're going to try to determine the worst story of all time. I'm just going to read one that didn't make the cut today. And we'll talk to Tim and find out what's happening in this crazy world of ours. Man fined for washing woman with his saliva. This is from Scotland, of course. A man who sprayed a woman with deodorant before washing her with his own saliva because she smelled of cigarettes was yesterday fined £300. Gavin Fairweather, 42, launched the bizarre attack at his home in Stonehaven, Kincardineshire, before arguing, how the hell do they name things there? Kincardineshire. Whatever. After arguing with the woman during Hogmanay celebrations. Is this a made-up story? Hogmanay? What is Hogmanay? And it's capitalized. Karen Dow told Sheriff Patrick Davies he said she smelled of tobacco. So he sprayed her with the... I guess this is at the house. Sprayed her with deodorant and then left. He then came back and repeatedly spat on his hands and forcibly washed her with saliva.
Forcibly washed her?
With his own saliva, saying over and over again, "You're dirty. You're dirty. You smell." The police said that they have the man in custody. All right, there you go. He's being fined, and I guess he'll be released. But there you go, ladies and gentlemen, the Ministry of Truth. He's your president, your prophet, your seer, and revelator.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, the Ministry of Truth. This is Tim Riley.
Tyson Tiger, yes, they have them, are preparing to meet protesters when Karl Rove visits tomorrow night. He's going to speak at a Republican fundraiser near Washington Square. Police say they're reviewing police activities from past visits of high-level political officials. I don't think Karl Rove's been here before. Bill Clinton's also due to come into town next week, and his wife Hillary is having visiting a private home during her campaign.
So Bill Clinton's going to be at the
Schnitzer.
He's going to be at the I can't talk today.
Schnitzer.
I barely knew her.
He's going to be there next Tuesday, mm-hmm. And then Hillary, is she going to be here as well?
I guess so. She's coming at some point.
All right.
She's campaigning at a private home. A reception at their private home costs $2,300.
Jesus God. So Karl Rove is here today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
And what is he speaking about?
It's a Republican fundraiser.
All right. And is it happening? Does it say what venue it is?
It just says near the Washington Square Mall.
Oh, I see.
So we'll have to ask some Republicans. Scotty must know.
It's really bizarre that it's Karl Rove, though, and not, you know, somebody else. I mean, it just, that guy.
Well, they knew better than to bring Dick Cheney because he didn't even come into town last time. He stayed at the airport.
Man, that guy, they're gonna heckle his ass when he goes to BYU of all places. I've been reading the BYU paper about that. When he goes to BYU, there are the school is already, and that's like the most conservative. Provo, Utah is the most Republican county in the most Republican state in the union. Provo is, demographically speaking, Provo, Utah is the most Republican county in the entire United States.
Even more so than Orange County.
Even more so. It is statistically speaking, it is the most Republican county in America. And that's where BYU is located, Brigham Young University. And the school has already said that they don't want Dick Cheney there because they think that they didn't use these words, but they said that he's basically a liar and a huckster and swindled us into going to war and so forth. That's more or less what they've said. So it seems to be going poorly for that side of the aisle right now. The fact that Karl Rove is coming here means that he's either become really, really confident or he just doesn't care anymore. Because of this, is like Lisa Goddard says, he's always just a man behind the curtain. He's always Oz the Great and Terrible. And, recently, he was like doing that thing where he was rapping on stage and so forth, and now he's coming to Tigard. Maybe he'll be hanging out at that little place where you can buy those hermit crabs for $1.99.
Meanwhile, that 15-year-old kid who fired two shots at his high school went to court yesterday, Chad Antonio Escobedo, apparently fired into the school window. Nobody inside was injured badly, but 10 students are hurt by broken glass. Two were taken to the hospital, the remaining 8 treated at the school. So this kid told police he recently watched a documentary on Columbine High School. That's enough to get most teenagers going. He said on Saturday he got the idea from his own school shooting because he was angry at two teachers He was mad at one teacher who had called his parents to let them know he was not doing well in school. He said he disliked the other teacher because she was mean. He also expressed anger toward his mother, who would not allow him to go live with his biological father in Eastern Oregon. So I guess she thought he was better in, well, what is better, Eastern Oregon or Gresham?
Where in Eastern Oregon?
It doesn't say.
I don't know.
Isn't that a sagebrush and whatnot out there?
There's fewer things to shoot out there anyway. Eastern Oregon, Eastern Oregon is not really the target-rich environment that I think Gresham probably is.
So I guess the dad moved to Eastern Oregon, but left behind. Oh, no. He found his stepfather's Winchester 270 rifle and three boxes of bullets.
Hey, thanks for leaving that around. Thanks for helping out. Jesus. Was it even lodged to say if it was locked up?
No, it doesn't.
This is my opinion only, but in my opinion, a great number of these households have firearms and weapons of all kinds that the mom and or dad, usually the dad, just doesn't feel the need to secure, because what could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with just leaving a goddamned rifle around for your unstable kid to pick up? Jesus. Let's see. This is... Oh, we might have a news alert happening here. Hold on. Where's
let's
my...
find out.
Oh, where's my news alert? No, that's not it. Cameron, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Yes, there's a boat sinking on the Columbia right as we speak.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of boat?
Like a Bayliner, 24 foot, him and his son.
Oh, and there's somebody on it? They're not off?
Oh, yeah, it's going down, like the Titanic, Rick.
Okay, don't. There's no need to be zestful about this. Now, where on the Columbia is this happening?
Just under the interstate bridge.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, how do you know this?
Because I just drove over the interstate bridge, and it's, like, sitting halfway in the water.
Really? And it's so it's half submerged under the interstate bridge. It's like a, you would guesstimate about a 20, 24-foot-long boat. Now, you know that there are two people you saw on it?
Yeah, there's police there, and they're trying to get the boat out of the water.
Oh, I see. So the cops are on the scene.
Yes.
All right. I thought that they designed boats. Now, this is something the guys in the audience would know. I thought that they designed boats now so that they couldn't sink. I remember being at a boat, a boat store, a couple years ago, because it was they were somebody wanted to do some advertising in the show. And before, not that anybody really cares about this, but you know, before somebody advertises in the show, I go and I look at it and talk to the guy and, you know, make sure that, you know, that it's all on the level and whatnot. But I remember this guy describing how this one boat they sold, literally, as he said, you could saw the boat in half and toss it into the water and it would still float, because the material, the resin or whatever they made it out of, was itself very, you know, it couldn't be sunk. It was very, whatever that word is, it was very floatable, though. But does the boat look like it's sinking or like it's just sort of floating, having taken on water?
It looks like it's floating, taking on water.
Interesting. And so there's a cop boat on the scene right now?
Correct.
All right. Well, we'll look into that. Thank you for the heads up, sir.
No problem.
God bless you. That's Cameron on the scene. Says there's some boat half sunk under the interstate bridge. Everybody stop in traffic now and gawk. All right. Let's get a couple of... Kevin, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Rick, love your show.
Thank you.
Never, ever go away, okay?
I'm doing my best on a daily basis, but that seems to be out of our control sometimes. But yeah.
This seems like it really sounds like a bad segue, but from the sinking boat accident there on the Columbia, but you were talking about Time for Timer.
Time for Timer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can go on YouTube and watch it.
Oh, that makes sense. I never thought about that. Everything's on YouTube now.
Everything. But you know, you opened up a flood of memories from, you know, the Saturday morning cartoon thing that I had growing up. You know, back in the mid to late '60s and '70s, is the thing that we look forward to as growing up as kids is watching, you know, Schoolhouse Rock. Those little nifty little 2-minute, you know, commercial things that they used to throw in to help kids with their grammar, punctuation, or,
totally,
or whatever. And, you know, the cartoons that they had back then are nothing to where they are now, because now they're just, you know, really dopey kind of things you can find in the Cartoon Network. But, you know, the Saturday morning cartoon thing for us was getting up in the morning, watching cartoons, turning the TV set on, and eating Captain Crunch.
Oh, no, and just eating sugar until your eyeballs fell out.
Yeah, and getting the sugar fix that would last 3-4 hours.
Exactly, your big bowl of chocolate frosted sugar bombs.
Oh, it was the best. There was nothing else like it in the world, because you wake up and that was the one thing that you were looking forward to. In fact, even on Sundays, you even had you know, first run cartoons on Sunday mornings. So you had Saturdays and Sunday mornings, you know, to pick out on Captain Crunch or whatever, and watching Herculoids or Johnny Quest, whatever.
Herculoids. Later on, I got a bail here in a second, later on, I'll play the hankering for a hunk of cheese thing here in a while.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, sir. There you go. That's Kevin. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, it looks like Ivan's raised $1 million in his first 5 hours of his charity fundraiser.
He's not allowed to raise money for people. I won't have it.
Who needs MSNBC? So on the air today, Ivan did not shy away from, talking about what needed to be talking about. He talked a little bit about the controversy.
That's potted down, whatever it is.
What's going on?
I can hear it in Q.
Is it in Q?
There's nothing.
Is it in mix?
I can hear it playing.
I see the talkback button is.
I can hear it playing out of a Q speaker somewhere in the studio, which is not going over the air.
Talkback button?
No, I don't.
Try the top button. You want to turn that off? Yep. Let's try it now.
Let's try this audio. This piece of audio again.
Okay, maybe it's because the bottom button is in. It shouldn't be.
Scotty J, would you see if Jeff McGinley is in the building, please?
Yeah, because this is the way it's always set up.
I think I actually just heard it coming out of the speaker on Tim's computer.
I did too.
So it's just, we are not able to, it's not coming up on the board for some reason.
Try it again?
Yeah, see, it's coming out of Tim's computer. That's just
that
the speaker
bizarre.
On the front of Tim's computer. It's just not coming up on the
this
board?
This is no different than how it's always set up every day.
All right, let me do this. Let me take a couple of these calls here. Sarah, I'm going to take these two calls.
Do you want to
run down the hall? Yeah, I'm sorry, and see if we can track down Jeff McGinley, because it looks like it's playing. It just doesn't want to come up on the board. Let's see. We'll get to Dennis here in a second. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, kids.
Hey.
Time for timer.
What's up?
And he was a pocket watch with legs and arms.
He wasn't a pocket watch, though, because he twirled a pocket watch, didn't he?
No, he was a pocket watch. He was swirling the umbrella, and it was like a hard-boiled egg or chicken leg or cheese and luncheon meat or a peanut butter sandwich any time of day is a treat. That was what he was, you know, he was inventorying your fridge to tell you that there's always something to eat for breakfast.
All right, he's going to perplex me. All right, well, I have to go look it up now.
Well, about the cereals, though, I wanted to note that you ever notice how when we were kids, they were like sugar frosted flakes and sugar pops and sugar snaps, and then suddenly it all became honey.
That's
snaps.
True. Now, we did go through a honey phase. All right, I got to bail, brother. Yep. Thank you. All right. I think this might be Jeff McGinley right here calling the warm line. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, guys. It's Jeff.
Hey. So we're having this thing where we're trying to play audio. It's coming out of the speaker on Tim's computer, but it won't come up on the board.
Yeah, sounds screwy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you suppose we can do about that?
Wait for me. I'm driving back. I should be there in less than 10 minutes unless I get pulled over by a cop, in which will be 45.
No, in which case you have to call us so we can listen to it on the air.
All right, I'll put it on speakerphone.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
All right, there you go. That's Jeff McGinley, ladies and gentlemen. All right, 503-733-2970. All right.
Well, we have a bigger fish.
Well, let's just move that to a temporary holding pile, Tim. With that news that has sound, and we'll do some non-sound news here, and we'll go back to that as soon as, probably on the other side of the break, we'll come back and do all that sense. My apologies, Jeff McGinley, he's on the way right here.
All right.
Hey, at least your computer's, it may not be working, but at least it's relatively grease-free today.
That is true.
You got
so
things
are looking up.
Look on the bright side. Mm-hmm.
That is true. Well, let's do a monkey watch instead.
Here's your monkey watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Tarzan's chimp turns 75.
Aww.
The star of 12 Tarzan films, Cheetah the Chimpanzee, celebrated his 75th birthday this week. Cheetah is the world's oldest chimp and has outlived both his human Tarzan co-star, Johnny Weissmuller, and Maureen O'Sullivan. The chimp was first discovered by an animal trainer on a trip to Africa in the 1930s and went on to star the blockbuster movies through the 1930s and 1940s.
Why was the chimpanzee named Cheetah? Does anybody know?
I don't. Maybe like Cheetos.
I never really. It was either that or Funyun.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Funyun. We go into jungle. Find elephant. And you, Bugle. That's a cheap joke. I never really watched the Tarzan things all that much, and I didn't really. I know this makes me a bad geek, but I never read the books either, the Edgar Rice Burroughs novels.
Well, anyway, a cheetah is currently living at a primate retirement center in Palm Springs, where all retired Hollywood people go.
That's fantastic. And she'll be treated at Cedar Sinai later on.
Yes.
Fantastic. So, happy birthday, cheetah. There you go. There's your monkey watch for whatever, for Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's get a couple of these boat calls real quick here. This is Adam. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm just, by the way, I got to look at this. I'm looking at this, as I said, I'm looking at this picture of Timer from Time for Timer. He is not a pocket watch. I'm looking right now. He's not a god. I don't know what he is. He's not a freaking pocket watch. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. The guy who said that was high. All right, how can I help you, sir?
Well, I have a couple questions. When is the listener party?
Listener party is next Thursday, April 19th, 7 p.m. at Barracuda, which is in 9 Northwest 2nd.
I know where it is. And secondly, not all boats float if you saw them in half.
Is that true? Now, because this guy, the word I was looking for, by the way, and I'm apparently not all that bright, the word I was looking for was buoyant. If something is buoyant enough, it won't sink, even if you chop it up into little pieces.
There is one kind of boat. It's called a Boston Whaler that you can literally stand on. Saw in half, and it will not sink.
That's fantastic. If I was really wealthy, I'd do that just to do that. You know what I mean? I'd buy it, and then I would just get in the middle of the ocean and just saw it in half while people watched me.
It's fantastic. You'd have to be wealthy, because they're very expensive boats.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep, great show.
Thank you. That's Adam. Good to speak. Good to hear that great buzz is back on line one as well. Fantastic. All right. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, they called it the most disturbing case of torture ever. A Multnomah County judge has sentenced a Portland man to 38 years in prison for putting a woman through an ordeal last summer. Michael Allen Nunley, Sr., who's 45, claimed in his trial last month he and the woman were engaged in consensual acts when he cut her with a sword, burned her with cigarettes and a blowtorch, and dragged her around his house by a belt strapped around her neck. He's sorry it all happened. Yes. Nunley said the woman that he met at a Sunday brunch later came back to his place. A few days later, the woman, covered in blood and feces, ran from the house naked. Prosecutor said Nunley, who's a male model, is a narcissist because he plastered his walls with photos of himself. The woman stopped by Nunley's house after brunch one day. After the visit, Nunley became angry because she used his cell phone and reportedly failed to return it. He wouldn't let her leave the house. Nunley's girlfriend, Dana Michelle Norton, came home to find Nunley with a woman. She testified that Nunley ordered her to participate in a sex act with a woman. She left for work the next day, even though the woman begged her not to leave because she was afraid Nunley might kill her. Norton was convicted of coercion and sentenced to 5 years probation.
Now, was she being forcibly held?
Apparently so, yes. Nunley's housemate left to go grocery shopping and then later slept at a friend's house. He's not charged with any crime. DA attorney Dan Reese describes a housemate as a human ostrich for failing to intervene. The Prince attorney, Downing M. Berthune, well, I guess that's... argued that during the trial that a segment of society still enjoys rough sex. But adults do behind closed doors in their homes is not a crime. It's their own business. Reese, however, argued the woman shouldn't have dashed from the home naked unless she was desperate to escape.
Downing M. Berthune. Smarty Bartfest could not be reached for comment. This email says, Rick, about time for Timer. He looks like a gigantic piece of gristle. Man, I hanker for a hunk of Timer, says Jen. Yeah, no, that last guy was on drugs. Timer is clearly not. He doesn't have any hands or numbers on him, or a fob, as they say. He is not a pocket watch. Rick, this email says, I was just wondering how many weeks it's taken to get the phones working properly. Shouldn't the glitches really be ironed out by now? It's not like CBS is a mom-and-pop corporation with Uncle Jed as the drunk maintenance-slash-janitor-slash-salesperson.
Well, Les Moonves has his hands full at the moment.
I was going to say, CBS is having what you might call a bit of a week, sir. There's what with all the slurring and the plagiarism and the hey-hey and the...
No one's had time to check the inbox.
So, yeah, really, right? Any emails I send off to CBS Corbin about anything right now, they're going to be... It's going to be a while getting back to me. They've got some other items in their planner. Their Franklin is full of A's and B's right
now. Maybe if we hand it to Al Sharpton, as he's standing outside BlackRock, he might be able to get something done.
Yeah, seriously, if you have anything you need to get to the attention of Les Moonbeth, just to send it to Jesse Jackson right now. That's probably the fastest conduit. The best way. Look, on your way in, could you? Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Rick, this email says about the sinking boat. I stood on the river's edge and saw nothing. No boats, no news chopper, nothing. The only thing sinking is that caller's story. Well, I'm unclear. I'm unclear about whether it happened or not, so we're just going to...
Well, at least Myron Frank isn't burning down.
Not yet. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, that torture story Tim read is awful. I mean, what kind of narcissistic, self-aggrandizing, big-headed basket case would put a huge picture of himself hanging up on a wall?
Several pictures.
Who would do that? Who would possibly decorate their own daily space with a massive picture of their own face?
You didn't decorate that, though.
No, it's true. I didn't have anything to do with it.
All. Yeah, I'm sure.
No, in no way did I. No way did I have anything to do with that. Here's Tim Riley.
Absent his only education would be permitted in public schools that choose to teach sex education under a measure passed by the Oregon legislature. The bill passed the House 63-34 and now heads to the desk of the governor, Chris Gregoire. I thought she was a woman. I thought her name was Christine. Anyway, Chris Gregoire, who's expected to sign it into law. Maybe she wants to be called Chris. Under the measure, schools would choose to provide sex education and would be required to discuss abstinence with students, but could not teach abstinence without also instructing students about, well, other aspects of the birds and the bees.
I don't understand how one teaches abstinence. With this phrase teaching, that's like that phrase, we've discovered a growth. I was talking about this a few weeks ago when they said, we found a growth. A growth is just code for they don't know what the hell it is. That's a thing. We found a thing. We're not sure what it is, but when in doubt, we're just going to cut it out and incinerate it in a biohazard bag. Teaching abstinence is the wrong phrase, and I'm not weighing in on the morality or not of this, although I was coincidentally watching a West Wing episode last night about abstinence-only education. I'm just going to say this. Without weighing in on the ethics of it, the phrase teaching abstinence doesn't make any sense. Because they're not really teaching anything. They're promoting and or lecturing or hectoring you about abstinence. Teaching means you are instructing someone on how to do it. It's just linguistically, this whole phrase grates on me. I don't really believe that anybody comes into the world needing to be taught abstinence. In fact, it's the other way around. You really need to be taught how to have sex. You don't need to be taught how to... In fact, really, let's just call a spade. Most teenage boys don't need to be taught abstinence anyway. Most teenage boys are sadly abstinent and celibate throughout most of their adolescence. That's just kind of the way that that is. So, the phrase teaching abstinence is this, it's a phrase that the extreme right wing has used to try to make it sound like something less than what it is, which is a lecturing and browbeating about abstinence, which is not at all the same thing as teaching. Teaching implies that you're passing along some sort of knowledge about the act, which this is not. This is just trying to make being a teenager less pleasant than it already is. Pat, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah, hi. Hey. That was that boat sinking?
Yeah.
That was the Vancouver Navy firing on the Gresham Navy in an act of aggression trying to tell Oregon to shape up. I'm sure that's what happened. I think CNN's all over it, so I'm sure you'll see it. And hey, why not go with it, right?
Let me just ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Had you fully formed this joke out before you picked up the phone to call? Was it a thing that you were forming while you were on hold, or was this joke freestyling out of you just now?
I'd formed it somewhat. We were farther than embryonic, but not quite as far as purely polished.
It was not a zygote stage joke.
Should I go back to the dressing room?
I would say so. I will give you a courtesy laugh, though. All right.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Pat. There you go. That's Pat. I like it when they have a good sense about these things. Here's Tim Riley.
Oh, Ivor said a little while ago at the end of his show, he has done apologizing for his remarks. So there. So no one ask him to apologize anymore. He already has.
Well, damn.
It may soon be illegal to drive and talk on the phone at the same time in Washington, if you got your hands on the phone. The Washington House voted 59-38 for the bill and says if you're caught driving with a cell phone and pulled over, you could be slapped with a $101 fine. You can use a hands-free device, though. The bill has some exceptions. Motorists can use handheld phones to summon help in an emergency or to report illegal activities. Why do they have this law anyway? The bill now goes to Governor Chris Gregoire, who, like everything else, is expected to sign it into law.
Strangely androgynous and asexual Chris Gregoire. Are you making that up, Scotty? Please tell me you made it up. You made it up. Please tell me you made it up. Are you?
What kind of talk is that?
I don't know. The thing you just typed on the screen. Please tell me you're making that up. Please tell me you're fabricating that, and it's one of your attempts at a joke. You can't what? That sentence on the screen, did you or did you not make that up? Is that a true statement or is it something you're saying as a joke? Okay, thank you. See, you got to clarify these things. He just typed a statement about IMIS that I wanted to clarify before I read it as a statement of fact. Thank you. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Let's take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. More of Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth later on. Steve Katzenbaum, Jim Roop, Top 5. More discussion of Listener Party 10 happening next Thursday, April 19th. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7, and a snuff watch. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
Time. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Hey, Tim.
Yes.
I've got something that's going to put a smile on that frowny face of yours.
A tooth cleaning?
No. Nor is it a hug.
Hugs are something I don't want or desire.
Drugs, not hugs, kids. All right. No, I will not be doing that. All right, Tim, close. I know this sounds awful. Close your eyes. I'm going to put a little...
I have a little surprise for you. All right, don't open your eyes.
Don't open my eyes.
All right, now, Tim...
You can open your eyes now.
You know what? I gave these as gifts for Easter. I went to the dollar store and I bought a crate of them.
I have to pass on this. Actually,
oh,
not
you.
From me. This is actually from our good friend Kara, who draws the chocolate cross. And the best part is how it's actually designed to look like wood grain. She said, "How sad! I found this in the half-off bin after Easter." So there you go. There's a chocolate cross from the Rick Emerson audience. Tim, I know you're.
Well, thank you, Kara.
There you go. So I knew they would put a smile.
We went flying in a balloon one day.
That's right. I know it would put a smile on your lapsed Catholic face.
Wonderful.
It's 503-733-2970.
Closer to God, O thee.
I believe we have... I believe we have the computer issues sorted, as the British might say. So we'll find out.
In this room, anyway.
Can I just... I'll just tell the story real quickly. So, Tim, you may know, if you listen to Like Us, you may have heard that Tim has now... We've expanded Tim's news because, of course, everyone loves Tim. And so he does doing the news not just during this show, but then at the top of the hour at 4, 5, 6, and 7. So if you listen to the Like Us show, top of the hour during Like Us, all the way up until the beginning of Don and Mike, you'll hear Tim Riley's news at the top, followed by Doyle Redland at the Onion News Desk. It's fantastic. It's kind of a 1-2 punch. Very, you know, very similar to the way that Bruce Agler used to run things, you know, to figure why change a good thing. So we're doing that. So, but of course, you know, we have a great new studio here that we're in. We talk about it. It's a fantastic studio for the most part. The news that Tim does during Like Us, he has to record in a different booth down the hall. And that booth is not as, technically polished. One might say, as the studios in the rest of the building. Things are sort of held together with spit and Kleenex in there. And so Tim was going back and forth from this studio to that studio yesterday, this studio to that studio, trudging up and down the hall. Every time I would see him, his face was more and more angry. His eyes were more ablaze with the fires of hate, clutching his headphones ever tighter, looking as though he wanted to break things. And around 2:40, he finally just came in, picked up his coat and his bag, and just trudged out the door like Willie Loman on his way home after a bad day peddling brushes.
And as I'm walking to the bus, somebody stopped me and said, "I hope your teeth feel better."
Well, that was nice of them.
That was.
But you'll note that Tim came in about 20 minutes before the show. Still had 20 minutes to go. Mm. Tim just came in and, like, grabbed his crap and just, like, didn't even think about it, just left.
It's done.
And it's done.
That's as good as it's going to get.
And I knew better. I took one look at your face and I'm like, F it. Like, I'm just going to let him go. It's better for everyone if he just leaves at this point. You did not look happy to be here by the end of yesterday's program.
No. I would have been happier dining with Al Sharpton somewhere.
All right. Speaking of which, do we want to take another run at these IMIS cuts? Because there's just not enough talk about IMIS these days.
No, there isn't. Well, anyway, he raised $1 million in the first 5 hours of his fundraiser today, so he doesn't need MSNBC. And good luck to them, by the way, because they'll never put anything on the morning that'll pull bigger numbers than he is.
Seriously, there's a test pattern that will beat whatever MSNBC puts on in the morning. To this. I mean, they're just shooting. I mean, just programming-wise, they're shooting themselves in the foot. That guy has never had, I mean, it has been 25 years since he's had a higher public profile than he has right now. So MSNBC, and again, none of this is to advocate or agree with what he says. It's nothing that we would say. It's nothing that we would approve of. But on the same, by the same token, you got to figure... Yet MSNBC has just shafted themselves out of, you know, because they focus on the number of advertisers who defected. They haven't talked about the bulk of the advertisers who stayed and who almost certainly would have been amenable to a rate hike.
Oh, and this just in already. Procter & Gamble says it'll reconsider yanking its advertising.
I'm stunned. Hard to believe, isn't it?
A day later.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know why? That's because they got the good press yesterday from saying that they were going to pull their ads.
Right.
And again, and I will make the blanket statement once more, and I'll just stop making the blanket statement, because it should go without saying. Nobody is in favor of what he said. Nobody thinks it was a good thing. It was a dumb thing to say. And as I said, he'll have to live with it, and he is living with it. As Likas said about Imus, you know, he'll deal with the consequences. That's kind of his punishment on this. People pay for the choices they make, and they pay for it with the lives they lead, obviously, as a man once said. And so, you know, that's the thing. So Imus is, you know, good, whatever happens to him, good or bad, I mean, you know, he will live with the consequences. So that goes without saying.
However, the consequences cannot affect CBS losing $15 million a year.
Well, that's the thing, is that he makes $20 million a year. Just the radio show is making $20 million a year. The television show, you add that, and he was making like $40 million a year. And there ain't no way they're going to let $40 million a year walk out the door. Not going to happen. Ever, 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 ever. There is no way. There is no amount of protesting that Al Sharpton can do that will cause them to throw away something that's making them $30 million a year. It's never going to happen. And as you pointed out, Tim, very astutely,
yes,
even Sharpton knows he's hit the tipping point on this, and that everybody's starting to think that he's kind of an ass. Because that's why he canceled that protest he was going to have today.
Yep, here he is canceling that protest.
We wanted to rally here today. I got on radio to postpone it with the storm. But we will be out here by the scores on Saturday at 12 noon.
Like, it's going to matter by then.
Yes, we will be out here on Saturday when the media cycle is effectively over. So
apparently he met with Les today, and who knows what came out of that. Also, Jesse Jackson, who these guys think they are? I mean, who decided that these guys are the leaders of anybody, actually?
Yeah,
what were they elected to be, and how long is their term?
There was apparently a vote at some point. I think I was out of the country when it happened.
So anyway, I just had a few things to say this morning.
If I hadn't have said it, we wouldn't be here.
Nope.
So let's stop whining about it, and we just have to move on, try to make things better. I'm going to meet with the kids.
Yep, he's going to meet with them next week, he says.
I said a stupid, idiotic thing that desperately hurt these kids. I'm going to go apologize to them.
By the way, I'll be waiting for Al Sharpton to apologize for all those cops in the Tawana Brawley case, who, to the best of my knowledge, never got an apology, ever. And as many people have said this morning, now, I do not know that this is the case, and I will say right up front that I don't know definitively that this is the case, but I do seem to recall, and I've read many, many op-ed pieces this morning to this effect, I do seem to recall that when this whole debacle with the Duke, the alleged rape that took place with the Duke lacrosse team, the alleged perpetrators of which were decreed to be innocent yesterday by the prosecutor, I do recall when all those allegations were made about the Duke lacrosse team supposedly raping that stripper, which again, they've been cleared of all of those charges, and it was a lot of prosecutorial misconduct, that Al Sharpton and I believe Jesse Jackson came out and said, for all intents and purposes, that they believed her. That they believed her accusations, that they believed she'd been assaulted. The corollary, of course, is that they believed the guys were guilty. If that's the case, then it was a de facto condemnation of the three guys as guilty. And if that's the case, I'm sure that they'll be stepping up to apologize to those three lacrosse players any day, now, any instant, probably happening right now. They're probably calling a press conference this instant to apologize for that.
Meanwhile, Meredith Vieira turned the tables on Al Sharpton this morning, blasting him not to do enough to stop black rappers from using the words like hoe and bitch in lyrics. He was on the program today, today, I guess. Is that where she works now? Today?
He was
can't
on
keep track
what
of
program today?
Today.
Little to make me laugh.
Vieira then challenged Sharpton, demanding to know why he didn't hold hip-hop and rap artists more responsible for spreading the message of demeaning and abusive language and accusing Sharpton of perpetuating a double standard. The Reverend explained that his organization, National Action Network, whatever this is working to get more rappers with positive messages on the airwaves.
We're all in the same gang. That's a little 80s humor there for you. All right, and so Imus raised how much? Was
$1 million.
In one day?
This morning? This morning, yeah.
With no television?
Right.
Well, it's good to see that they've had a crippling effect on his career.
I'm even tempted to donate some money to him.
Seriously, I was just thinking the same thing. It was so... I'm a big-ass, bleeding-heart liberal, and everybody knows that. And I think that goes for the people in this room. I think that goes for this show, with the exception of Scotty. That I'm more liberal than anybody you know. I'm as big a bleeding heart as God ever created. But it really does make... It really is tempting just to crack open my checkbook and send $50 to the I'm His Cancer Kids thing.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right.
So, NBC News President Steve Capus was on the Today Show and said, IMUS has been a problem for many years.
There's no question that his program has had provocative conversation and interesting conversation, deep conversation with thought leaders, political leaders all through the years. But it's also had that other element. And at some point, you have to say enough is enough.
Well, let's see if MSNBC is capable of coming up with such high-caliber guests for their new morning show, whatever that might be.
Yeah, sir.
About IMUS. Let's see here. Al Sharpton. Nah, no more Al Sharpton. Had enough. Anyway, let's talk about the suicide bombers in Iraq. Apparently, three Israeli lawmakers were killed. What would their job be? Iraqi lawmakers. What laws would they be put in? What laws are being followed there?
How would they be implemented or enforced in any way?
How would we know that they're gone? Well, three Iraqi lawmakers have been killed by a suicide bomber at a restaurant in Baghdad's parliament building. So apparently there is one restaurant there.
There's a parliament? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dozens of others are wounded in the attack that's being called one of the worst security breaches inside the fortified green zone. Oh, that's it.
That's that house they've got where the whole government lives.
Yeah.
That's that little apartment.
Mm-hmm. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says, Baghdad is still obviously a very dangerous place.
We've known that there's a security problem in Baghdad, which is why the president has structured a new strategy and why General Petraeus and his commanders are carrying it out. But this is still early in the process.
Where was she being interviewed just there?
It doesn't say. We don't know where she is today.
A salon of some kind.
Maybe.
She's having her
boots polished.
I was just going to say, having her nails done while she gets ready to fly to Paris for dinner again. Oh, good God. I really want to see a reality show called What the Hell Does Condoleezza Rice Actually Do? Mm-hmm. That'll be the name of the show. What the Hell Does Condi Rice Do? Because Donald Trump made an observation. She gets on a plane, goes somewhere, comes out, gets on another plane, goes somewhere else. That's it, man. It's just like endless dinners and boot buying sprees for her.
Senator John McCain says the battle against the insurgency is a success.
All of us sad for those public servants who have been injured or killed. But I don't think that should change the larger picture, which means that we are achieving some small successes already in the strategy being employed.
That's true. The salad bar was not destroyed in the bombing.
Has he developed a new whistling S when he talks? He suddenly... I can't do it. I can't do the... but he's got that whistling sort of sibilant thing. God damn, he just sounds old and tired all of a sudden. That's too bad. Well, I'm kind of... because he's what? He's 70... How old is he now? 72?
Yeah.
72. So, I can't... How old was Reagan when Reagan got reelected in 84?
Oh, he was close to 80, I think.
Really?
Yeah, the oldest president.
That can't possibly be true. We didn't elect an 80-year-old man president. There's no way.
We sure did. All he had to do was stand up in front of the TV camera and make speeches every now and then.
Wave a cowboy hat and say it's morning in America.
Yeah.
Look all leathery. Okay, well, I guess the stranger things have happened. John McCain just seems so cranky and just unstable now. I can't imagine how cranky he's going to be when he's 78 years old. Man, he'd be blowing everything off the planet before breakfast. Yeah, it's over for him. He's put a fork in him. He's done.
Meanwhile, White House spokeswoman Dana Perino says, by popular demand, violence in Iraq will continue.
I don't know if we'll ever see the end of suicide bombings. It is extremely troubling. And I think that what this shows is that this is an enemy that they say they're defending Islam. But they're killing their fellow Muslims and destroying their infrastructure and ruining their way of life.
That's our job. Step on our action. Our job is to destroy everything that's good over there. All right.
Well, let's drum up some support for Iraq, shall we? We're going to go to the American Legion, where their commander, Paul Morin, says the lawmakers are tying the hands of the commanders in the field.
By pushing the idea of a timetable for withdrawal, the House has passed a blueprint for disaster. The Senate has passed a recipe for surrender, and we oppose both.
Now get behind the bar. Pour me a cold one.
And get that spaghetti going. Meanwhile, the VFW National Commander Gary Kirpius says Congress is leading the military to defeat.
American forces never lost a battle in Vietnam.
I have huge challenges.
Similarly, Americans will not lose the war in Iraq because of enemy action. Our defeat will be caused by the lack of Americans' resolve to finish what it starts.
I cannot quit eating even long enough to clear my mouth to make speeches. You can just hear he's got that big Sam the Bulldog face going on with those huge...
And when I say jowls, am I talking about the right thing? Are jowls just bit fat cheeks? Is that what those are?
No, that's when your neck is hanging down.
No, that's a waddle.
A waddle?
What? What's a... Let's get a hold of ourselves here. A waddle is when your neck hangs down, right?
Not to my knowledge.
What are...
A waddle is a walk.
No, well, okay, that's also true. A waddle is what Vito has on The Sopranos. He does that penguin thing.
Mm.
I thought a waddle was like this,
No.
Like somebody, let's say Dennis Pitzenbarger has this here. This
Dennis
sort of,
Pitzenbarger's looking good. You know he's lost a lot of weight.
That's not true.
It is true.
Since when?
Since.
Look, I'm no one to point fingers, but I'm going to point fingers right now. Really?
No, he looks really good. Seriously.
Dennis Pitzenbarger, the car guy? Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, maybe it's I see him a lot and so I have a note. I'm not saying he's a bad-looking guy, but I'm saying he's...
Maybe just looks worse because you see him too much.
He's... I've grown weary of his face. I grow tired of your visage, Mr. Pitzenbarger. Get thee hence. Well, because he... Look, and I'm no one to point fingers again, but he and I had talked about when he got your photo taken. As one becomes more and more fat, as one hits middle age, it becomes corpulent. The deal is, as you try to trick the depth perception on the camera, because it's a 2D photo, the deal is you try to, like, jut your head out, like, you try to push your head way out like a turtle, because it pulls back the double chin a little bit. You kind of do like a, and you sort of, like, lean forward as much as you push your face. Yeah, see, Sarah's doing it, too. You push your head way out, because then it pulls the that double chin taut. I thought that double chin was called a waddle, and I thought that jowls were having... big fat cheeks, like a bulldog.
We have to call some plastic surgery clinic. Maybe they could tell you.
There
are plenty of them out there. Probably up above 23rd. People with that kind of money.
Reagan was 74 when elected president. He was 78 when reelected.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
God damn. How weird. Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi, Rick. I just am disappointed you missed the obvious upside of I Must No Longer Being simulcast on MSNBC.
Now is there a punchline coming?
Yeah, you know, no longer do we have to see the equestrian-like horse-faced Deirdre, his wife. I mean, did that woman need a bag of oats hanging around her neck?
That's
or what?
A terrible thing to say. Now, Deirdre Imus is attractive, is she not?
She is very long-faced and horse-like.
You know,
and
I bet
true of a woman.
You can't. This is a terrible thing to say, and I bet you. I would bet you're no prize, my friend.
Deirdre, why the long face? No, she. No, really, she's very disturbing.
She's disturbing.
She makes Ann Coulter look attractive.
All right, we're done. Thank you.
One quick joke.
Do I get? Wait, hold on. This wasn't humor just now. I get more of your rapier-like wit. Okay, go ahead. Yes? Oh, for the love of me. Okay. Just a wasted call is what that was. All right. I think he's confusing Deirdre Imus with somebody else. I thought Deirdre Imus was hot. I thought that was the whole... I thought... Am I thinking of somebody else? I thought Imus' wife was attractive. I thought she was very, very attractive. You know, she's not really young. She's younger than he is, though. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Who was that hot news girl that he had on with him for the longest time? Oh, yeah, Contessa Brewer. She was hot. That was just on, I'm confusing. It doesn't matter. You know what? I'm asking questions that no one will know the answer to.
She's pretty.
Contessa Brewer or Deirdre Imus?
Deirdre Imus.
Yeah, she was pretty. I mean, she's not like a knockout. But she's, you know, she's not hideous in any way. Yeah, I'm asking questions that no one, I can hear my questions echoing off the brains of listeners out there because no one has been watching or listening to the Imus show in so long that no one will know the answers to these questions. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Now let's see, a quick traffic check here. We have a crash blocking one lane of I-5 northbound at La Center. We have several miles of backup traffic. So don't go looking for help there, especially at the casino. Meanwhile, for the fourth straight week, Sanjaya Malika didn't make the bottom three on last night's elimination of American Idol. Haley Scarnato was given the boot instead. The 24-year-old had been mainly receiving comments from the judges, especially Simon, about her attire over her singing.
I wouldn't wear anything that I thought was inappropriate. Just, it is what it is. So he hit me below the belt the other night, so that was pretty tough. Yeah, he just
commented
about what I was wearing, and so that was a little harsh.
He hit you below the belt the other night?
Mm-hmm. How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.
Hi, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. You know, it is cold out there, and a lot of the birds that you would normally be listening to, you'd be enjoying their warbling, are not there because the plunging temperatures, as described to us by NPR, making it difficult for some of these birds to stay in the area here in the Pacific Northwest, and many of them are going south, including the precious woodcock.
How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.
It's true. Here's Tim Riley.
Anna Nicole Smith's sister, who knows she had one?
No, they always have sisters. They have sisters, they have nieces once removed, they have uncles slash brothers.
And all the relatives, all the siblings had different last names usually.
Of course.
This woman's name is Donna Hogan. She has written an unauthorized biography on the Playmate model called Trainwreck. Hogan said she and Anne haven't spoken in 10 years, so what better person to write a book about her?
Even though I didn't speak to her, doesn't mean she's still not very important to me, even in death, you know? I mean, she'll
especially
always
in
my
death.
Sister and I'll always love her.
Well, she can't sue you now. She's especially important.
Hogan describes the abuse Anna suffered at the hands of her mother, the evil Virgie.
She did tell me that she was abused by her mother. She did say that her mother would hit her. Virgie was a mental abuse on her that she couldn't handle.
Why is she called her mother? Don't they have the same mother?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't know the inner workings of the Hogan family tree the way that some do, Tim. My particular genealogical interests do not. And Virgie, isn't that what Borat called the female private area? Isn't that what he was always saying?
Perhaps.
Her Virgie is eternally ruined. Rick, you're right about Wattles and Jowls. Oh, that's Wattle, W-A-T-T. What? Wattle. Wattles and Jowls. That's like kibbles and bits. Wattles and Jowls, more or less. Walking like a duck is to waddle with a D. Okay, so walking with like a duck is to waddle with a D?
Like the restaurant that used to be before you went into Vancouver.
Yes, that is now a Hooters. Boy, that makes me angry every time I drive by it, though. I'm sure Hooters is a fine restaurant. Fantastic sponsor. We're happy to have their money. I'm just saying, the lack of that Waddle sign kind of makes me angry. It chaps my ass, as they say. Here's Tim Riley.
No, they say hide.
It hides my ass? It hides my ass. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, here's good news for pet owners. Some tainted pet food will remain on store shelves. The Food and Drug Administration has issued that warning, urging store managers to double-check pet food supplies against a large recall list. Meanwhile, in the Senate hearing, the FDA's Dr. Stephen Sundov said there's no evidence that contaminated wheat gluten has entered the human food chain. This must be the pet food study group. Tainted wheat gluten is thought to be the culprit in the deaths of more than a dozen dogs and cats in the U.S. Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin warned that the actual number of infected dogs and cats may be higher. Dozens of brands of pet food have been recalled since revelations that tainted pet food surfaced last month.
I love the idea of a guy named Dick warning you about the dangers of taint.
Yeah. So that's the...
It's funny.
The pet food study group.
Okay. It's 503-733.
How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.
2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
So apparently they want this guy to take down the sign that says, you could get stranded and die. This was posted near the road where the King family took that wrong turn not too long ago. The Rogue River Canyon, remember that story? This was the helicopter pilot who found Katie Kim and her two young daughters who put the sign up, and now the federal government wants it taken down. The sign got an endorsement from local officers such as the sheriff and the Josephine County Emergency Service Director. You can't get bigger than that. I love that man, said she. That's what she told the Grants Pass newspaper. He just got tired of waiting. Over the years, numerous people have gotten lost around Bear Camp Road and its offshoots, mainly the federal logging roads. And the feds said they were working on signs to put up there. Yeah, we're doing a lot. We're just not there yet.
I love the authentic hick accent you color these stories with. I'm a big fan of that idea. They ought to put big ass billboards. Like you go into Mount Hood, Mount St. Helens. You're going to the gorgeous. There ought to be a door in the middle of a giant sign. That you walk towards the sign, and there's a door in the middle of it, and you actually have to walk through a sign that says, "By entering this, you acknowledge that you might die." You know, abandon all hope, ye who enter here, that you may just end up having to eat one of your companions and then dying of exposure. If you agree to this, walk through the door. That will eliminate all of this trouble in the future. Let's see here. Going to Utah. Hi, hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, it's Jesse in Vancouver.
How can I help you, sir?
Hey, I'm getting foisted up to Salt Lake City, Utah for some training with my company.
What kind of work do you do?
I work in audiovisual installation.
Okay, and so why are you going to Utah?
They're going to train me on some new stuff that we're rolling out.
I get a lot of phone calls, not a lot, but I mean more than a few phone calls from people who are being sent to Utah against their will and who are calling to ask advice. What is your question, sir?
Well, just, you know, you've been stuck there before or lived there voluntarily, one or the other.
I went there for radio, and then I have to go back a couple times a year because of my my wonderful in-laws.
All right. What, is there anything interesting to do there?
No.
No.
Well, I'll take it back. How long are you going to be there?
3 days.
Oh, no. Because if you were going to be there for weeks, I would say you could ski. You could go to Park City, which is a beautiful place. If you were going to be there for a month, I could say you could take a trip to southern Utah, like Moab, which is, do you ever watch the Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner cartoons?
Yes.
That's exactly what southern Utah looks like, with all those weird, insane-shaped rock formations. They have, you ever get a chance for anybody, if you ever go to southern Utah, they have rock formations that look like they are from Mars. I mean, it's like the most amazing stuff that you don't even know how it stays up, because it's like a tiny, tiny little cylindrical sliver of rock with like a huge boulder that weighs like a billion tons on top of it, balanced in the middle of the desert. It's insane. If you're going to be there for 3 days, is this Salt Lake City proper?
No, Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Hide in my hotel room and pray that nobody comes knocking.
Seriously, there's just a whole lot of nothing to do there. Are you married?
Yes.
Well, okay, take that off the table. let's see. Do you like music? Are you a rock and roll fan?
Very much so.
The one thing you ought to do while you're there, go to a store called the Heavy Metal Shop. You see a lot of guys in bands. In fact, I was just when Sarah was moving the other day, one of the guys who was helping you move had a Heavy Metal Shop sweatshirt on.
Yeah, Rob. He's from Utah.
Yeah, there's a store there called the Heavy Metal Shop. You ought to go there because it's a really famous store in the metal community, in the hard rock community. And the fact that it's in Salt Lake makes it even better. That's a pretty cool place to go. You can check out the Heavy Metal Shop. And if you are into Thai food, food from Thailand, I will say that Salt Lake City has some of the best Thai food I've ever had in my life. The one upshot of Mormon missionaries traveling the world is they go to countries and live there for a couple years, and then like GIs, they come back and they bring a lot of that food with them because they learn to love it in their other countries. So if you like Thai, you can get great Thai there. Other than that, if you drink or smoke, you're pretty much screwed, because everything is weak and hard to get, and the girls are really hot, but you're married, so that's off the table. So I would say learn to enjoy in-room porn, although even that is not of the good variety, even that softcore. So you've really got a whole lot of nothing to look forward to.
Bring a really big book, you say?
Bring a really big book and get a milkshake at a place called the Iceberg. That's all I can tell you, sir.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. All right, there you go. Nothing. Yeah, even the porn in Utah sucks. It's just terrible. It's awful. Nothing to do there. Let's do one more. We'll take a break.
Well, Southwest Hillier's Ferry Road has reopened after a 12-hour closure. A large tree down power lines at Taylor's Ferry and 2nd Avenue, plunging the area into darkness. Dozens of homes in the dark, but electricity was restored. This morning, 12 hours to remove a tree known for lumberjacks and forests. Why does it take 12 hours to remove a tree?
I don't understand. Can't you just set those on fire and then the whole problem just sort of takes care of itself?
That does sound good.
Works itself out. Rick, a friend and I are traveling all the way from Tucson to come to Listener Party 10.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to make... I mean, it's your life. That's pretty great. I'd like to make sure that we actually make it to the party and have not paid our hard-earned cash for a plane ticket and hotel. Come on, how great is this?
Wait, so they are coming?
It's from somebody, Carol in Tucson. Rick, a friend and I are traveling all the way from Tucson, Arizona to come to Listener Party 10. I mean, that's really great, but goddamn, I wouldn't walk across the street to see me. I guess that's because I see me in the morning, but what are you going to do? I like to make sure that we...
That's
I mean,
awesome.
It really is awesome. It's just a little...
Wow.
It just makes me feel like... I don't know. It makes me feel kind of strange somehow. Now I have to be entertaining. I'd like to make sure we actually make it to the party and have not paid our hard-earned cash for a plane ticket and a hotel. I don't even want to know how much that costs. Only to be stuck on the sidewalk in front of Barracuda because they've reached maximum capacity. Should we be concerned, or is Barracuda immensely huge? What can be done to make sure that a couple of single ladies from Tucson get into your party? I think the answer is in the question, Carol. By the way, I've been told the celebrity I most resemble is Terry Garr. Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. And then she says, listen to this, not 2007 Terry Garr either. My friend's cute, too, she says. Uh-huh. My friend's cute too doesn't really ever mean that, by the way. My friend's cute too means like I'm a knockout and she's okay. I didn't read anything past Terry Garr. Once you had me, once you say Terry Garr, the rest of it is just sort of a, I got to quit thinking about that. Now, here's the thing about Barracuda. Barracuda, one of the reasons that we chose that place, eggs, they got a big stage, which is elevated enough so that everybody can kind of see the action. And also because it's a big place, so there's room for people to get in there. Because we have had, I don't want to go on about the unpleasantness, but we've had some listener parties in the past that went poorly. And the one that went the worst was just because the capacity. And it's not like we're going to, you know, fill the Rose Garden or something. But by the same token, we did a listener party a few years back where the capacity of the place and the size of the crowd were not at all a match with each other. And there was, I mean, you know, you always like to see that, you know, there's a good turnout and that, you know, if people have to, you know, wait a few minutes to get in, well, that's fine. But it was like 20 degrees and there were people outside for like 90 minutes. And that was just no good. So Barracuda is a big place, got a good sized place. And it's spread out too, which is, it doesn't feel like you're all congested. It feels like you got a little bit of room to breathe in there. So, no. There shouldn't be any problem. But seriously, drop us an email or a phone call or something when you get into town. Because if you're from Tucson, you know, we'll swing something. So there you go. Tucson, Terry Garr, fantastic. I'm going to post this on the website. We have the best audience in the history of everything. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, top five, Jim Roop, Steve Kastenbaum. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Two of the worst stories you've ever heard. One of the worst songs you've ever heard. And a discussion of public toilets. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.